Sherry Brady with Summit Mortgage. So remind our listeners about the, just in case somebody is has been hibernating for years and years and years and is not familiar with Summit Mortgage, remind our listeners Summit Mortgage and who you are.
Summit Mortgage, we are located in the Forest Professional Park, just across 221 from Walgreens and all of those brick business offices over there. Our phone number is 434-237-1027, and our website is lynchburglender.com. We do mortgage loans for the purchase or refinance of your home, and we can do pretty much any kind of loan. Right? There's really nothing that we can't do. I used to say that the only thing that we can't do is ground-up construction, but we are on the verge of being able to offer that as well.
So, nifty.
Yeah, we do VA loans if you're a veteran, USDA loans for 100% down in the counties, VHDA loans for, you can use them anywhere in the state, and they have multiple types of loans, but they particularly good for 100% in the city, and conventional loans, of course, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and conforming, non-conforming, jumbo. We do 203K renovation loans, and like I said, we're hopefully on the verge of having construction.
One-time
close.
You do it all.
We do it all.
All right. This morning, we're in a seller's market. People who want to buy a home need to be
ready
to go.
Ready.
And that means they have to have papers in hand, if you will. So let's talk about the difference between pre-qualified and pre-approved, because people still get them those mixed
confused,
up.
Confused, yes. So pre-qualified is really, if you think of pre-qualification, it's a hypothetical approval. We have a phone conversation. Maybe you don't want me to pull your credit yet. Maybe you're just trying to get some general information. So you tell me, I watch my credit all the time and my credit score is 744. And you give me an idea of what your monthly minimum payments are on all of your liabilities, and you tell me what your income is, your hourly or monthly or yearly income, and I say, okay, based on everything that you just told me, if all of this is accurate, then you should be able to afford X. That's just pie in the sky.
And that's pre-qualified.
That's pre-qualified. And there are some lenders out there that will issue a letter based on that conversation or that little bit of information. Me personally, I'm not going to sign my name to something saying that you can go buy something until I have verified your income and assets. And I would hope that you would want it that way too, because you don't want to get yourself into a situation where you've put a contract on a house and you're walking down the road to buy a house and only to find out that there's some roadblock that you can't get around. So what I highly recommend is that we then, after we've had that conversation, we then move forward through to pre-approval, which is when, okay, now I actually pull your credit report in. We figure out what your credit scores are. Are there any surprises out there on your credit report that you didn't know about that we need to get handled? You give me pay stubs, W-2s, tax returns, and I verify all of your income, and I verify where's your down payment coming from? You know, is it coming from a 401k? Do you already have it saved up in the bank? Are you going to have to save it on the way to getting to closing? And we make a plan for all of that. Then you are pre-approved, and I have looked at your whole picture, and I can see that there's nothing in the way of you being able to buy this house, and so I give you a pre-approval letter that says you are approved to, I mean, we still have to go through underwriting. You still have to find the house, and the house has to be approved, but you can buy a house.
That's when you're able to make an offer and they accept it and that kind of thing.
Yes.
And of course, you have to be careful. Just because someone might be pre-approved for X amount doesn't mean they want to pay that much in the mortgage. You know what I mean? If you're pre-approved for $500,000, but it doesn't mean
you don't want to pay that. You don't
exactly
want to buy that much house, right?
Right.
So
I think some people that kind of their eyes are bigger than their stomach, if you will,
or the other way around. They come in not with any particular idea. Maybe they haven't looked at houses yet, and so they want me to kind of figure it out. Backwards, like what is the maximum that you could afford, And then quite often when I tell them that, they're like, oh, no, 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 I don't want that. And they're like, wow, I could, you know, get qualified to make a $1,600 a month house payment. Oh, no, 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 I don't want it to be more than $1,200.
Right. You get people who say, whoa, $500,000, that's twice what I'd expected. I'm getting a huge house.
Yeah, and they don't even realize, like, if you've been paying
for the same payment or something.
If you're kind of making ends meet and you're paying $1,000 on a rent, you don't want to suddenly get into a loan where your mortgage would be $3,000.
Right. And that's so that's called payment shock.
Okay.
That's called payment shock. And one of the things that I talk to people about as I'm moving through information gathering, one of the pieces of information that I gather is, what are you currently paying? What are you currently paying for your rent or for your housing? And I mean, if you are, let's say that you're a college student who's, you know, gone back to work and maybe you moved back in with mom and dad for a little while until you got, you know, your career figured out. And there are quite a few millennials that are just now coming into the market. So maybe you haven't actually been paying any rent, and maybe now based on your salary, maybe you're in a good job and you've, you know, coming into your second year of it, third year of it, and you could afford, qualify for maybe a $1,200 house payment, but whoa, that's a lot. That's a huge jump. So yeah, we have that talk about, yeah, you could afford this, but do you want to afford this? Do you want to be house poor? I mean, you're going from zero to 160. And yeah, so that's a conversation that we have about.
But that's the kind of thing you walk people through. Yeah.
Yeah. What's wise and prudent versus, you know, what could you do?
Do you ever tell people, hey, maybe as a transition, maybe at least for 6 months or a year, go out and rent yourself a modest apartment and just, and you know, you've got to make sure you write your check every month so you've got a record of it, and so that maybe it sort of eases you into it a bit.
Well, no. If they are living at home and they're in a situation like that, then what I advise them not to do is not necessarily go get into an apartment, although that is an option, certainly. But if they have time, if they're just beginning the looking process and they're not in any hurry, then I advise them to, if we come to, let's say, an agreeable $800 a month as their projected house payment, put $800 a month in savings now for the next X number of months. So that does several things. That proves to you that you can actually put that much money aside. That proves to an underwriter that you can put that much money aside. And that helps to create a down payment where previously you didn't have one. So multiple things get accomplished when you put yourself in that place.
If you're living rent-free, there's no need to get rent.
Actually, the thing to do would be to convince your parents to write you a receipt for the money you're saving as your rent every month.
Mm, well,
you know, and so that
well,
it'd be a little duplicitous.
You could pay mom and dad with a canceled check. But mom and dad writing your receipt isn't going to help. But you could pay mom and dad with a canceled check, which would prove that you paid it. It didn't create your savings, though, but mom and dad could then give you a gift.
No. So, you know, I'm being much more duplicitous than you think.
Yeah, I know you, Brian.
Yeah. I expect mom and dad to just hand you the cash after they deposit the check.
When Brian's like this, just ignore him. Don't even try with his clever schemes. We're going to talk now about things not to do when you're in the home buying process. And one of those is not to put a large amount of money in the bank.
Yeah, cash.
A large amount of cash unexplained into the bank.
Ideally, once you have talked to me and we have done your pre-approval and I've looked at your bank statement, one of the reasons why I want to look at your bank statement to begin with is not only to see if you're in a position where you're able to make a down payment, we're going to see where that down payment is coming from, but I'm also going to see what kind of deposits do you have coming into your bank account. Ideally, in a perfect world, I look at a bank statement and there's nothing but payroll deposits there. If there are other deposits, if there are transfers into your account from a different account, then we're also going to have bank statements on that account, because every deposit into your bank account has to be sourced. So we have to know, where did that money come from? If it's a direct deposit from your payroll, we can clearly see that. If it's a deposit from some other bank account that you have, then, like I said, we have to have a statement on that account as well. And then that opens up what deposits are coming into that account. This particular piece right here is probably the most annoying for people. And having to document all of this is the most tedious of the processing, the whole processing of your loan usually. Because you could get into where there are times that I've had to pull in three other, four other bank accounts because there are all sorts of transfers into your bank account, into your primary bank account from other accounts. So once we start this process, let's identify all the accounts that we have to look at. And then let's refrain, if at all possible, from making deposits that we cannot clearly explain where the money came from into those accounts. So if mom gave you $200 for your birthday, try not to put it into the account, because we're going to have to, especially if we're doing a 100% loan, a USDA or a VHDA loan, we have to explain every deposit, regardless how small it is. On some of the other loans, the FHAs and the conventionals, we have a little bit of a little bit of a cushion, a little bit of a tolerance. So you might not have to explain every $25, $50, or $100 deposit. But if it turns out that it's, you know, it's enough to make up, you know, 10, 20% of your income for the month, now we're going to have to explain it. But on USDA, VHDA, every deposit, $25 cash deposit, where did it come from? So if you have a yard sale, use the money at the gas station.
Keep the money in your pocket.
Yeah, use the money at the grocery store.
Spend it.
Spend it. Spend it.
But now, so that's only for cash, though. I mean, if you have a paycheck or a check,
yes.
You know, like for your winnings at a casino, for gosh sake, or if it's
your
direct
deposit.
He loves casinos. He always brings that up.
Well, but yeah, if you say, look, this $5,000, I want it in Fat Tony's poker game.
Not going to work.
What if you send Fat Tony and some of his guys over?
Probably still not going to work. But if you have, if you get your payroll that's not direct deposited, I have had clients that they work for a small company. They get handwritten a paper check every week. They don't necessarily even have a pay stub, if you will. So what you need to start doing, if that's your situation, make a copy of your paycheck before you deposit it, and then deposit only that check. Don't deposit another penny with it, so that the deposit that I see on your bank account matches exactly the amount of your paycheck. And start keeping that. Once we talk, then generally we've got, you know, if you're just starting the looking process, we've generally got at least 45, 60 days before you get ready to close on a house. So even if you can't produce any good paychecks yet, we've got time to produce 30 days worth between now and the time you close. So that's why doing the pre-approval up front is also so important, because if there are any little things like this that we need to correct, modify,
catch it.
We can catch it early.
Another thing is, you shouldn't, in that time period, don't open any new credit or change jobs.
Right. Or buy a new car.
Or buy a new car. Because what happens now, we are required to essentially monitor your credit from the time that we initially pull your credit until the day that your loan closes. It's not something that I'm going to go in and pull your credit every day, but once I pull your credit and you become an application, so we're actually moving forward to buy a house now or refinance your home, then there's a little applet, if you will, running in the back, a little cookie running in the background of your credit. And if you apply for new credit at any point from the day I pulled your credit to the day we close on the loan, I get notified that there has been a new credit inquiry on your credit report, and we have to explain it. We have to do a written explanation as to what that was for, and you have to state whether or not you obtained new credit. Did you open a new credit card? Did you buy a washer and dryer? What did you do? And why do we have to do this? Because we are certifying to Fannie Mae, FHA, VA, we're certifying to them that we have taken into account all of your debts. There's a federal law now that came, it came out of all of the Dodd-Frank and, you know, everything that all the new regulations that got put into place because of the crash. One of them was called the ability to repay. We as lenders have to certify that on any loan, we have verified that you have the ability to repay this loan. And the only way that we can certify that you have the ability to repay is if we have considered all of your current debts and obligations with the new obligation, and can you afford it? So hence all of these methods to ensure that we're considering everything.
We just have a minute left. Did you want to very quickly mention changes in credit reporting?
Yes. Effective in July, credit reports will no longer reflect judgments and tax liens. We will still know about them because the credit providers will provide us a public record search, but they will no longer appear on your credit report, which should hopefully help credit scores a little bit. And one of the reasons that they're doing that, I believe, is because so often you pay those things off and the reporters are so slow to report that they're paid. So hopefully this will help the accuracy of credit reports now.
And also, you have an app for smartphones.
I do. I have a smartphone app. You can get it from our website, lynchburglender.com, or you can email me or call me, and I'll text it to you or email it to you. Website, lynchburglender.com. Our phone number, 434-237-1027.